Even with the best winds, a trip all the way from Thelana to Amia would take weeks. Fortunately, Rissen had plenty to occupy her. There were future trade deals to begin setting up and communications from paralyzed people around the world to answer. Rissen sincerely hoped she'd someday get to meet these friendly letter writers in person. The ship sheltered in coves for high storms and everstorms, which let Rissen go briefly ashore to send letters via spanreed. Although the Wandersail had been built to survive storms, sailing during one was still something they would do only in an emergency. As the days passed, Rissen tried to learn about the people on her ship, though her crew was difficult to engage. She now recognized their resentment as a form of empathy for their captain, who they felt should have been given the ship. But even without that, talking to them would have been awkward. She was their Repsk, more unapproachable than an officer. When she tried to engage them in conversation, they'd respond in noncommittal ways or grow quiet. The Lopin did not have that particular problem. He was fascinating. She'd imagined Radiance and seen them from afar, but she hadn't met many. The one she had the most experience with was the solemn, quiet man she'd visited to see if her legs could be healed. He'd explained to her that he couldn't heal wounds that were more than a few months old. He'd been aloof, despite his obvious compassion for her situation. She'd watched Windrunners soar overhead and imagined them as mighty warriors. Battlefield legends who inspired with bold actions, heroic deeds, larger than life, as if cut from stone, sculpted like the statues in the temples of the heralds in Thalen City. Lopin pranced around her chair in circles on hands and knees.
You gotta have two hands to properly crawl. I came up with my own version, sure, when I had one hand, but it was more of a shuffle, see?
He moved to crawling with one hand, the other behind his back.
That looks very much like crawling to me, Radiant the Lopin.
It's different, though. I tell you, I missed being able to do it.
You missed crawling?
Sure, I'd lay in bed and think, Lopin, you used to be a majestic crawler. These louts don't know how good they have it, being able to crawl whenever they want.
I can't imagine that if I were restored to the use of my legs, I would wish to do something so silly as crawl around.
He flopped down onto the deck beside her chair, rolling over and looking up.
Yeah, maybe. But it's nice to make people laugh at you for something you do, and not something you can't control, you know?
Yes. I think I do.
The seas were moderately rough today, though no storm was predicted. Wavespren danced atop the tips of whited caps across a field of shimmering blue. Rissen sat at her customary station on the quarterdeck, far aft, tucked in the corner beneath her sunshade and securely strapped in. Nickley had been true to his word, and so she now had a nightstand to her right, bolted to the deck with a latching cabinet where she could store books and writing materials. The captain gave the seat a look every time she passed, and Rissen could feel what she was thinking. What an impractical location. Sitting here, Rissen was exposed to the wind and occasional sprays of seawater. Why not stay in her cabin, as Durwan had suggested? People said things like that with a straight face, while being hit by wind and sprays of seawater themselves, never seeing the hypocrisy. Rissen wanted to be up where she could be seen, where she could watch the horizon. She wanted to listen to the sounds of the sea, the sprays, the crashes, and the calls of the sailors as they worked. Nearby, Queen Navani's scribe, a slender ardent named Rushu, knelt beside a box, where she tinkered with some fabrials. Though they were a few weeks into the trip, Rissen hadn't yet received her promised demonstration of those, though she hoped it would happen today.
So, no any good no-legged Thalen jokes?
None worth sharing.
One-legged jokes seem easier. What do you call a one-legged Thalen? Lean? Nah, that's not close enough to a real name. Huh.
Lopin, you should not be tormenting Brightness Rissen with your prattling.
The Lopin nodded absently. Then his eyes opened wide.
Oh! Why was the no-legged Thalen unhappy? Because she'd been defeated. Hey, Huyo, listen.
Rissen couldn't help smiling as he proceeded to tell the joke in Herdazian to his cousin, a squat bald man with a wide round face and beefy arms. The way the Lopin spoke, with such enthusiasm, such insistence on being seen and not ignored, made her feel relaxed, even encouraged. His cousin, in contrast, was a quiet man. Curiously, Radiant Huyo had spent most of the trip so far lending a hand with various shipboard duties. He could tie knots and work the rigging like he'd been born on a ship. Today, he simply nodded pleasantly at the Lopin's joke and continued working on the rope he'd been untangling. That was a lowly duty, usually assigned to a sailor who had slept in late. But here, a knight radiant was doing it without being asked.
Lopin, that was not appropriate.
It's all right, Ardent Rushu.
You shouldn't have to listen to things like that, Brightness. It's unseemly to make mockery of your ailment.
The thing that's unseemly is how people treat us sometimes. Risen, they ever ask about how it happened? And then get angry if you don't want to discuss it?
All the time. Ash's eyes, they keep poking at me like I'm a riddle that exists only to entertain them. Others get quiet around me and awkward.
Yeah, I used to hate how folks would pretend I was gonna break at any moment.
Like some kind of fragile vase that would tip off the shelf if upset. They can't see me. They see the chair.
They act so uncomfortable. They don't want to look and don't want to bring it up, but it hovers about the conversation like a storm in spring. But if you have the right joke...
Brightness Risen shouldn't have to crack jokes at her own expense in order to make other people more comfortable with their personal insecurities.
Yep, true. She shouldn't have to.
Rushu nodded curtly, as if she'd won the argument. But Risen understood the tone in the Lopin's voice. She shouldn't have to do such things, but life was unfair. And so you controlled the situation as best you could. Strange to find such wisdom in a man she'd initially dismissed as silly. She inspected him lying on the deck, and he raised a fist in a gesture of solidarity.
Radiant the Lopin. What do you call a Thalen who can't walk?
Not sure, Gancha.
Names. From afar.
He grinned widely.
Of course. I'd never stand for that sort of thing.
Oh, cousin! Oh, cousin!
The Lopin translated the jokes. Rushu moved closer to Risen, carrying a box of gemstones and wire cages.
All right, Brightness. I am sufficiently prepared to provide a demonstration.
Knowing you, Sela, you were prepared yesterday and the day before that. What happened? Get distracted by wondering how fish breathe?
We know how fish breathe, Lopin.
Rushu laid her equipment on Risen's table. Then she blushed.
I got distracted by reading a new report on the curious interaction between Flamespren and Logicspren. The most interesting things are being discovered. Apologies, Brightness. I'm prone to letting the days slip past me now and then. But here, I'm ready.
Rushu handed Risen a silvery hoop with half of a glowing ruby attached to the top.
Hold that out in front of you, your arm straight. Excellent, just like that.
Rushu stepped back and held up a similar hoop.
Now, twist the gemstone's housing to conjoin them.
Risen did so. Rushu let go of her hoop, and it remained hanging in the air. The hoop in Risen's hand felt slightly lighter than it had before conjoining them.
You're likely aware of this application of rubies.
Rushu stepped beneath the sunshade.
It's how we make span reeds. Two halves of a ruby, containing two halves of the same spren, can be made to move in tandem with one another. Many people, however, aren't aware that gemstones can be paired in such a way as to make their movements opposite one another. Oh, traditionally, we've used amethyst for this, but rubies work as well. And we have an excess of those from the ranches at the Shattered Plains. Now, move your hoop around, but carefully, as the paired one might move differently from the way you anticipate.
Indeed, as Risen moved her hoop down, the floating one rose upward. If she moved her hoop left, the other moved right. It seemed to be a perfect transposition.
We've known about this for a while. Our current creations are more in application than innovation. We've spent months developing housings for fabrials that won't unduly stress the gemstones, and have begun creating lattices that allow a large number of them to work in conjunction. That is how we create flying platforms. Each has a lattice of rubies conjoined to another lattice that is set up in a convenient location, such as alongside a plateau with a steep cliff. We can lower the cliffside lattice, and in so doing, raise the lattice on the distant battlefield, and provide a platform for scouts or archers.
But span reeds don't work on ships that are sailing.
Rissen moved her hoop around, watching its other half respond.
Why does this?
Well, the problem with the span reeds is that the ship is always rocking and moving. If you're holding one in your lap and writing, you may feel that you are being steady. But since the entire ship is moving so much, the reed on the other side will be wobbling around and surging up and down. We've found that there is simply too much motion to properly use span reeds this way. However, right now, both of these loops are on the same ship. They rock together, move together.
But when the ship goes down, shouldn't the other ring go up?
Yes, theoretically, but it doesn't. Only your movements affect it. We believe this has to do with the frame of reference, as applied to the person moving the hoop. Spren, it should be noted, have curious relationships to our perception of them and their motions. You see both of these hoops in the same frame of reference, so they act together. That's why the motion and curve of the planet don't influence span reeds. It's proven impossible for someone on a ship with a span reed to see themselves in the same frame of reference as the person receiving the communication. Perhaps there is a way to train ourselves, but no one has discovered it. Indeed, even the size of the ship can influence these things. If you tried this experiment on a rowboat, for example, the results could be different.
That didn't make much sense to Rissen. Still, it was evident that the ship's motion didn't affect the two hoops. They both moved with it, rather than one ring being left behind or being sent hundreds of feet in the opposite direction as the ship sailed forward. Fabrials. Her Babsk had always been fascinated with them. Perhaps that was something Rissen should have picked up from him.
So how's this going to help?
The Lopin sat up beside Rissen's seat.
Oh, we're gonna stick those to her legs and then have this other person walk around and she'll be able to look like she's walking.
Well, we were rather thinking of making her seat hover in the air.
Oh, that makes way more sense.
He seemed disappointed nonetheless. Rissen shook her head.
I see why Brightness Navani was hesitant to make any promises. If we were to make a chair hover for me, it wouldn't do me much good, would it? The chair would have to be attached to a lattice of gemstones. And then if I wanted to move forward, someone would have to move that lattice. So I'd still need porters and carriers.
Unfortunately, yes, Brightness.
Rissen tried not to let disappointment show on her face. The world was becoming a place of wonders. Men and women soared in the air, and ships were being built with lightning rods right in the masts. At times, everything felt like it was progressing at an insane pace, yet none of it seemed able to help her. The healing was amazing, as long as your wound was fresh. The Fabrials were incredible, as long as you had manpower to operate them. She had let herself begin to dream of a hovering seat she could direct under her own power, without needing to be hauled around like a roll of sailcloth.
Be careful. Don't sink back into that lethargy of inaction.
Life was better for her now. She'd learned to change her surroundings to suit her needs. She dressed herself every morning with ease, using the hooks. Plus, she had her own ship. Well, she owned a ship. At any rate, this was better than sitting in a dull room doing accounts.
Thank you for the demonstration, Adantrusha. The technology is fascinating, even if the application doesn't seem suited to my needs.
Well, Brightness Navani did assign me a list of tests to run. She gave some thought to how this might help your specific situation. Perhaps you'd like to get a view as grand as that of the eel's nest. We could send you soaring up high. Or perhaps we can fashion a little lift to raise and lower you to and from the quarterdeck. That can be managed with some counterweights and a crank that can be wound periodically by one of the sailors.
That seemed a pale offering compared to her dreams, but Rissen forced out a smile.
Thank you. I should like to be available for those experiments.
Rushu deactivated the hoops and returned them to her box, along with some other machinery, including several silvery sheets of metal of varying thickness.
Aluminum. It blocks the span reed communication, something we only recently discovered. Navani wants me to experiment with how thick the aluminum needs to be to function, and then see if it affects, in any way, how paired rubies react, or don't react, to natural ship movements. I even have some foil to... Oh, I'm getting too technical, aren't I? Sorry, I have a tendency to do that.
She looked to Rissen, then to the Lopin, who was sitting and rubbing his chin.
Wait, back up. I need an explanation.
Lopin, I hardly think I can...
How do fish breathe?
Rissen smiled at the Ardent's exasperation. Rushu thought it was a joke, but the Lopin seemed genuinely interested as he pestered her for an explanation. A sudden motion distracted Rissen as Kistlid rushed up to the quarterdeck and whispered something to the captain, who had been chatting with the current helmsman. Rissen focused on them, on Kistlid's worried face, and on the captain's immediate frown. Would they remember to inform her, whatever it was? The captain gave an order, then started down the steps. Halfway down, she paused to glance at Rissen, and noticed that Rissen was looking directly at her. So the captain, seeming annoyed, walked back up and trotted over.
What? What is wrong?
Dark soul casting. And bad omens. You should probably see it in person, Rebsk.
Cord, the horn-eater woman, dug her hand into the barrel, then pulled it out, letting thick grains of lavis dribble between her fingers. This revealed the worms. Though they were generally the same color as the grain, they uncurled and writhed on the surface, then buried themselves again.
All of the barrels?
Each and every one?
I came to get supplies for food, and discovered they are everyone this thing.
Rissen watched, troubled, as the sailors demonstrated the presence of worms in the other barrels. She kept meaning to find time to chat with Cord, but the woman had been spending her time in the galley, helping feed the crew. That had reinforced Rissen's initial assumption that she was a servant. The Radiance, however, didn't treat Cord that way. So who was she? And why was she here?
The grain has been cursed. Dark soul casting performed by evil passions during the storm.
Or we simply bought some stock with dormant larvae hiding inside.
We checked thoroughly. We always check. And look, this first barrel was left over from our original stores, taken on in Thalen City. This other one, was from an early resupply. And this one we picked up only 2 days ago. All have worms now.
She caught the other two sailors nodding, muttering about dark soul casting. Wormy grain wasn't the worst thing. Many a sailor had eaten such during a long trip, but the sudden appearance of worms so early after restocking and infesting all their barrels, this would be seen as an omen. It was an old thing of Thalen superstition. The passions, it was said, changed the world.
Spontaneous genesis has been disproven multiple times, Armsman. This didn't happen because there's some kind of dark soul caster aboard our ship.
Maybe it happened because of our destination. The men dream terrible dreams full of premonitions, and their dread passion creates omens.
Two nearby sailors nodded. Storms. With this, and with the death of the ship's pet the day before setting sail, well, Rissen herself almost believed. She needed to turn this attitude around quickly.
Kesslin, how much of the crew knows about this?
All of them, Rebsk.
Kistled glanced toward the horn-eater woman.
My sorrows. I did not know this thing was... He was bad. I asked others.
It is done. Nikli, to my cabin. Quickly.
The tattooed porter, along with his assistant, quickly carried her up from the hold to the higher decks. Yes, Rissen could imagine the convenience of a small lift, working via Fabriel. When she reached her cabin, she found the Lopin waiting for her.
Something wrong, Gancha?
Corrupted food stores.
Nikli held her chair while his assistant opened the door.
I need to do something about it quickly.
I could fly to one of our outposts.
Lopin followed her into the cabin.
Lash some more grain into the air and bring it to us.
A viable suggestion.
Nikli set her at her desk. She immediately began digging through the notebooks in the bottom drawer.
However, I feel we need another solution.
Rissen pulled out a specific notebook, then nodded to Nikli, who bowed and withdrew with his assistant to stand outside.
This isn't about just our lack of food, Gancha.
An astute observation. One of the biggest dangers at sea is letting your crew get away from you.
Like that crew from the ghost ship, who seemed to have gotten away from everyone.
I wasn't referring to anything so dramatic. But our situation could quickly turn dangerous if the crew starts to think I've brought them on a suicide mission.
It was one of the conundrums of maritime life. Sometimes good crews, well-trained, would mutiny. Her Babsk had talked about it, and she'd found herself reading story after story. Spending so long on the ocean, isolated, the crew's emotions fed off one another. Things that were irrational during brighter days started to seem reasonable. Emotions could take on a life of their own, like Spren, and suddenly good crews would become hysterical. Your best defenses were discipline and swift action. She searched her notebook for notes from a specific trading expedition she'd taken with Vistam several years ago. She'd been a brat back then, but at least she'd been the kind of brat who wrote about how annoyed she was.
There.
She found the entries. An expedition into the wilderness of Hexie. Vistam had purchased wormy grain out of Triax for mere chips, and she'd thought him insane. Who bought grain with worms in it? But as with all things he'd done, there'd been an explicit lesson in Vistam's actions. Trade wasn't only about buying things and selling them, he'd reinforced to her time and time again. It was about finding a need that wasn't being fulfilled. It was kind of like soul casting, taking scraps and transforming them into the brightest of gemstones. He'd made her write down a list of locations.
Fetch the captain for me.
Rissen unrolled one of her maps. She didn't realize until after he'd gone that she'd given an order to a Knight Radiant. Would he be insulted? But when the Lopan returned with Durlwan, he didn't seem the least bit offended, merely curious as he looked over her shoulder at the map.
Rebsk, we need to take a short detour.
Rissen made certain the entire crew was on deck to watch as she invited the Hexie nomads on board. A quiet folk, uninterested in the politics of the world, they kept their hair in braids and smelled faintly of the animals they kept as sacred beasts. Their priestly class did not eat flesh, as they'd taken oaths forbidding it, but they considered grubs and insects to be plant, not animal. They were one of six groups Vistam had made her write down as people to whom she could sell wormy grain. To initiate the trade, Rissen read off the phrases that Vistam had required her to record. The nomad sifted through the grain and found it to be good, barely eaten by the worms, which were plump and fat. Careful not to take advantage, Rissen negotiated briefly but firmly. The end result was a large stock of jerky made by the nomads from the dead of their animals and kept specifically for trades like this. The blankets, given as a gift to Rissen, with the phrase, "for an honored," because of her respectful language, would sell for a good bit as well.
They actually bought worm-filled grain? I'll admit, Rebsk, I hadn't believed you until just now.
The Stave never brought you here, I take it?
Ah, this did smell of one of his schemes. I wonder why this isn't common knowledge. This place should be swarming with traders trying to offload their old grain for profit.
You'd think that. But that's not what I learned from Vistim. The Hexie tribes must be approached carefully, and their language is difficult to learn. Act arrogant, and you'll turn them away. Plus, the grain needs to be fresh, good grain, though with worms. They won't buy something that has festered and is full of decay spring.
Still.
She was right. This was a mostly untapped market. But who wanted to trade wormy grain when there were fine rugs and jewelry to show off? Who wanted to visit the Hexie wilderness when the grand bazaars of Marat were so close? Only someone who understood need and the true soul of a trader.
Thank you, Babsk.
She surveyed her crew and saw far fewer anxiety spread than before. This had mollified them. These last few days had been tense, but the crew were more jovial as they returned to their stations. Rissen had, hopefully, inverted the omen. That was the traditional way to disperse such a thing, to derive a good turn from it. To those who followed the passions, this showed that fate was on your side, even when an omen tried to darken the way. You could always defeat gloomy passions with optimism and determination. Even the worst high storm dropped fresh water. It was all nonsense, she'd come to believe, but it was the most intriguing kind because of the underlying truth. Omens weren't real, but the way people reacted to them was very real. Inverting that was all about perspective. Like how a barrel full of worms was worthless or of great value, depending on your perspective. Nickley picked her up at her request, For simple transfers like this, he brought her in a cradle carry rather than using his sling, which she could sit in. As he walked toward the quarterdeck, a couple of the sailors waved to him, and Nickley smiled.
It worked, I see.
He deposited her in her seat beneath the sunshade.
You seem to have made a few friends on board.
Nickley bowed his head.
I guess I shouldn't have doubted. Yes, Brightness. They eat with me now, ask about my homeland. They are not so prejudiced as I thought.
They are, and they aren't. As I said, sailors on a ship can be a tight-knit group. But these here on the Wandersail chose this duty, preferring long-distance voyages that take them new places. They're not the type to dislike someone solely because he looks a little different. At least, no more than they distrust anyone else who isn't part of their ship family. You merely needed to join that family.
Nickley knelt beside her chair as she buckled herself in.
You are also different from what I expected, Brightness. I thought working for a merchant would involve... Well, thank you. For the way you treated those nomads earlier, and the way you treat me. For your wisdom.
I wish it were my wisdom, Nickley. I was trained very well by a teacher I didn't deserve, and can never live up to.
Brightness, you seem to be doing a fine job, in my estimation.
She appreciated the words, but now that she knew how the crew felt about her, she found it more difficult to quiet the voice inside. The one that whispered she didn't deserve to own this ship. She hadn't earned this station. She hadn't made the money, proven her acumen, or worked her way up to being a shipmaster. Everything Rissen possessed, she had been given. There was an uncomfortable truth to the way the captain regarded her. Rissen was untested. She was undeserving. Even victories like the one she'd accomplished today had been achieved by leaning on Vistam and his lessons. She wouldn't stop doing that, of course. Ignoring what she'd been taught out of some kind of petulant spite was exactly the kind of thing the youthful her would have done. That voice persisted anyway.
You know, I have this strange, perhaps selfish piece inside me that didn't want the crew to like me. It was easier to think of them all as bigots.
Nickley looked down at his feet.
That was small of me.
No, just human of you. You know, you still owe me the story of why you left your homeland. Don't think I've forgotten.
It isn't a great story, Brightness. We are a small village, my people. Not much of interest about us.
I'd like to hear it anyway.
Nickley thought for a moment. Rissen had traveled quite a bit of the world, and she'd never seen tattoos like his. They had been inked over some kind of scar tissue, as if his skin had been carved, allowed to heal, then overlaid with the white tattoos.
I was betrayed by someone I trusted. Soon after, one of us was needed to go to Thalina. My people, though small, like to know what is happening in the great nations of the world. I volunteered, so I wouldn't have to be around the one who had treated me so.
That only raised more questions in her mind. She didn't press him. It didn't feel right.
Did your master have any wisdom to share about traitors? About how to deal with someone you trust who turns against you?
The Stim said you always read contracts with friends in extra time.
That's it?
I asked him on another occasion to explain. He said, Rissen, being cheated by someone you love, is worse. Discovering such a deception is like finding yourself in a deep, dark ocean, with nothing around you but formless shadows of things you once thought you understood and enjoyed. It is painful beyond explanation. But that is never a reason to pretend it can't happen. So read those contracts again, just in case.
That's a different kind of wisdom than I'd anticipated. I thought maybe this man lived purely a life of charity.
The Stim is good and honest, but you don't get a reputation for either without some people seeing your nature as an opportunity.
He'd warned her of that fact, too, and she'd often wondered what specific experiences had taught him the painful lessons. He'd never shared the details.
Brightness, I hesitate to say this, but I think you should know. I am the type of person many ignore, and I listen well. I overhear things. Brightness, I think the Radiants and their friends are hiding things from you.
Why would they do that?
I don't know. but they are talking, and the Ardent told one of them to quiet down, lest the crew, or you, overhear. Something to do with the mission. That's all I heard. But I do feel I should point out that the Horn Eater was the first to discover the worms, and the Radiant still haven't come up with a good explanation for why she's on this voyage.
What are you implying?
No implication. Merely sharing what I heard.
I think we can trust the Knights Radiant.
I'm sure people also thought that 2,000 years ago.
Then he stood up.
But I probably shouldn't have said anything. I need to go to the head, but I'll return soon, Brightness.
Rissen discarded the idea that the Knights Radiant had planted those worms, but there were questions that itched at her. How had those worms appeared so suddenly? And what had killed the ship's pet? Rissen realized she hadn't asked. But as the ship set out, she considered. She obviously wouldn't be the only one who understood that omens, despite being nonsense, could have powerful effects on the people who observed them. If someone wanted to interfere with this mission, a few well-placed omens would be an excellent way.
Be careful about jumping to conclusions.
The solution was to watch, because if she was right, another omen would soon arrive. Nickley stepped into the head, locked the door, and turned off the body's sense of smell to avoid being bombarded by the odor of this place. Nickley held up this body's hand and made a fist, pleased by how long the form held. But now Nickley relaxed, and the seams in the body's skin split, letting cool air reach into its squirming insides, which shivered, relieved to finally be allowed free motion after keeping tight for so long. At the same time, Nickley closed the body's most obvious set of eyes, its human eyes, which were actually functional, something Nickley was proud of. Most sleepless used prop eyes that caused their sight lines to be off, easier to notice. With the body's eyes closed, it was easier to feel the distant pieces of the self spread all across Roshar. And Nickley could make them buzz, communicating with the others, speaking directly from mind to mind as its buzzes were interpreted by hordlings bred specifically for the purpose.
We have a problem.
Indeed we do, Nickley Asorm. They aren't responding to your encouragements to turn back. You have failed. Other measures will be required.
The problem is not that. The problem is that I am coming to like them.
This is not unexpected. I like the Bondsmith, for example, though I know he will destroy us.
It was First, the oldest of the swarms on Roshar. Nickley was the 24th, youngest of them.
He will not. He has made the decision of honor.
That is why he will destroy us. He is more dangerous now, not less.
This is a different argument. You like these humans, Nickley Asorm. That is good. We are so bad at imitating them, and you learn well from your travels. More of us should spend time studying humans to become like them.
Plus, we should have compassion for those we must cull. It is good you like the humans.
Must we cull them, though?
Humans are a fire that must be contained. You are young. You are not yet separated during the scouring.
I would like to try again to ward them away.
This is a mess. It should not have gone this far. You should have killed them before this.
They should not have found the ship. This would all be contained if it hadn't been discovered.
It was sent to sink. It could not have survived storms without help. Its discovery is no coincidence.
Our Glomidarian crosses us again. It meddles more and more. It has met with these new Radiants.
Are we certain it was wrong to do so? Perhaps that was the wise move.
You are young. Youth is beneficial in some ways. You learn faster than us, for example.
Nickley could imitate humans better than the others. when the swarm that had become Nickley had been separated, it had already contained hordlings evolved for this subterfuge. Nickley had further evolved them, and was now certain that the body didn't need the tattoos to cover the seams in its skin.
Aklo Medarian is dangerous. I can see this. But it is not as dangerous as the true traitors.
Both are equally dangerous. Trust us. You do not bear the scars of memory older swarms do.
We must listen to the youthful. They're not set in their ways. The humans that come this time are not pirates. First, looking only for lucre. They are more persistent. If we kill them, there will be more.
My plan is the best. Let them breach the storm.
No. No, we must prevent that.
At this point of conflict, the question was sent to all of the swarms, all 20 that still accepted the leadership of the first, to ask, was it time to sink the human ship? The responses were tallied. It was a stalemate, they decided. Half wanted to let the humans reach the storm, where they would either fall to the winds or enter the realm of the sleepless. Half wanted to kill them immediately before the storm. Several, like Nickley, abstained from the vote. Nickley's own swarm buzzed with relief and satisfaction at the uncertainty in the others. This was an opening.
I would like to try one more time to ward them off. I have an idea that I believe will work, but I will need help.
This was sent to another vote, and Nickley's bodies, the distant ones not on the ship, all vibrated with anticipation. Yes, the vote came. Yes, Nickley should be allowed to try again.
It hurts us to kill Radiance, let alone one of the Sighted. You may try this plan. If it fails, however, I will hold another vote, and you must be willing to take more drastic measures.